Nu, nu. So, was nu? Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing, 1, 2, 3.
From the Abraham Lincoln Bookshop in Chicago, Carl Sandburg, poet and historian, whose six-volume Lincoln is part of the American culture. By the time this program has been televised, Mr. Sandburg will have gone to Washington to lecture a joint session of Congress. Have you done your homework, Carl?
Only in your way of speaking, but I'm going to work a little harder on this than anything I ever did.
I'm sure you have.
I'm told that only one private citizen has had this privilege before, and that was George Bancroft, the most eminent of American historians in 1866.
And from Washington, another illustrious son of Illinois, Everett McKinley Dirksen, the newly elected Republican leader in the United States Senate and author of 5 novels. Senator Dirksen once described himself as an old-fashioned garden variety Republican who believes in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and Abe Lincoln's. Senator, I take it that definition still stands.
Oh, definitely so. It's good enough for me.
Our third Lincoln fan is on a small island in the English Channel.
Now be quiet,
from Alderney Island, Northcote Parkinson, who, as Raffles Professor of History, Malaya University, wrote the best-selling book, Parkinson's Law, which has made a science out of the study of bureaucracy.
Who's this?
Professor, this should endear you to all...
This is whether Lincoln would be a Democrat or a Republican.
What was your purpose in writing it?
Oh, well, I didn't write is solely to endear myself to Republicans, but I'm very glad that I've succeeded in doing so, especially if I've managed to win over the Senator this evening.
Well, gentlemen, Abraham Lincoln ran for the presidency in 1860 as a Republican and won. That brings up the question, what kind of vote-getter would candidate Lincoln be in 1960? After all, he didn't have the television personality of a Nixon or the oratory of a Stevenson or a Dirksen or the glamour of an Eisenhower or a Rockefeller. And his wife was hardly
Sandburg,
a political asset,
and,
according to
Parkinson.
The great historian Carl Sandburg. Could he have been nominated, much less elected?
The very world, the political structure is entirely different from what it was in the days when Lincoln was nominated in the wigwam in Chicago. And yet, there is something so fundamental and so impressive about him that he would have impressed himself deeply upon this generation.
Why is that there?
Now, women, the politicians would have accepted him and nominated him for the presidency on the party ticket. That, of course, is so entirely speculative for which one cannot readily provide an answer.
What would you say to that, Professor Parkinson?
In the modern world, and I venture to say, particularly the American world, we have a great emphasis on the team spirit and on togetherness and on the whole idea of people being as alike each other as possible. And today, the eccentric is suspect in a way that he was not in Lincoln's day. And my feeling is that Lincoln would have frightened the politicians of today, except of course Senator Dirksen, but the others, the less distinguished and the less broad-minded politicians would have been frightened by a character like Lincoln and would have done all they could to keep him out of power. And my feeling is that they probably would have kept him out of power, and he would have drifted the way that folks expected him to drift in his earlier days from one job to another and ended up as a failure.
Well, this is rather keen of Mr. Parkinson. The friend of Lincoln in Ohio, John, he lived in Lebanon, Ohio, and he had a saying that to succeed in politics, a man must be a solemn ass.
What was that, Carl?
Carl Lincoln, of course.
Carl,
with that remarkable sense of humor that he had.
Carl, did I hear you correctly? correctly? Did I hear you correctly? I thought you said that
John Corbin of Ohio said that if to succeed in politics, you must be a solemn ass.
A solemn ass.
Lincoln could not ask. He had difficulty at times in even impersonating a solemn ass. The sense of humor in him was a strange one, sometimes plain barnyard stuff, and then again thin ironics that you'd have to read a second or third time to know he didn't strictly mean what he was saying.
Well, may I intrude?
Certainly.
Well, now, look at Lincoln at Gettysburg, how solemn he was there, how solemn he was on that misty morning when he was inaugurated into office. Now, to be sure, there were times that he could lay up a policy with his cabinet. So you must say that he was solemn, but he was so intensely human along with it.
Well, during 4 years, he never had a photograph made, but what he was perfectly solemn. Never a semblance of a smile.
But Carl, he didn't have all these newspaper cameras setting him constantly, and TV cameras saying, now say cheese and moisten your lips. Look in this direction and that direction. It was quite a different format in those days. And so I suppose the men who made those old daguerreotypes long ago would probably say to him, well, look solemn, look like a preacher, and hold it for at least 60 seconds. And I can really understand Lincoln looking so solemn in those days. Today it's quite a different thing because the photographers will not have it that way.
Or if we had a crisis in this country, anything like that terrible bloodbath of those 4 years where Lincoln was the mastermind of the North, I doubt whether any president would have a cheerful look on his face. And it's significant that Lincoln did smile when all was over, when Lee's after Lee's army had surrendered. Then came a smile on the photographs made of him. Three or four photographs there in the last weeks of his life.
But Carl, with all these modern devices that Senator Dirksen mentioned, radio, television, movie cameras, do you think Lincoln could be nominated and elected today?
Well, I would say this with certainty.
Yes.
On television, whether nominated or not, he would be a card. You had a voice. I want to report somewhat like that of Will Rogers. He has a Will Rogers drawl in his speech, except when he was very intense. And the very look of him was that of a great actor. I'd say, in a term that's in use much nowadays on TV, he would have been terrific. I think that we could have gathered a nomination for next year against any and all comers.
Which nomination, Carl?
That's going out on a limb.
Republican or Democrat?
For either the Republican or the Democratic Party, it's easily conceivable that he might have been with either one.
Well, I think Abraham Lincoln would be a Republican because he was a conservative. He characterized his own party as a conservative. And his abiding devotion, of course, to the individual and the individual spirit certainly would have made him a Republican in this rather accelerated age when there's a hint of paternalism in the air and everybody looks to government with their woes and their desires.
He can't be relegated to any given party or faction. He had something as peculiar as, you might say, ranging from Socrates to Gandhi. Abraham Lincoln was both a conservative and a liberal. Neither wing has a right to exclusive possession of him. When there was a revolution in Hungary, he helped phrase resolutions of complete sympathy with them using the word, the liberals of the world are with these Hungarian patriots. And in his respect for the Constitution, in his respect for property, in his respect for slaves as property, he was a conservative. But I never knew him to use the language, the word conservative with respect to himself, but it was more often the liberals of the world.
But Carl, can I intrude at that point? May I intrude?
This is that kind of a game.
Lincoln used the word conservative right frequently when he referred to the Republican Party. And so, considering all things, first of all, as you say, his devotion to certain fundamental things, including the individual. Secondly, his embrasure of Republican principles back in 1856 would definitely stamp him as a Republican.
Well, on December 1, 1862, in his message to Congress, he made the most elaborate and skilled argument that he could formulate to Congress in favor of funds for the purchase of slaves in the border states that had not yet seceded from the Union. And he failed to get those funds, and the time came when he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. And it was the greatest deed of what the Marxians call expropriation, the seizure of property without compensation. If you can give me an instance of any president of the United States being more radical or revolutionary, I'd like to have it.
Well, Carl, isn't that only an instance of where Lincoln came to grips with reality? That was one of the great qualities of Lincoln. But that doesn't argue for a moment, in my judgment, that if Lincoln were here today, that he would not be a Republican, because I think he would, and I do verily believe that he would eschew the liberal stand.
Professor Parkinson, how do you view this from the English channel?
I know far less than the two Americans in the program, and if I have any advantage at all, it's possibly in having read Carl Sandburg's book more recently than he has. But the question, I found it awfully difficult one. It's rather like a question, how would Lord Nelson fare in the Navy of today? And the answer is, of course, that he wouldn't be in the Navy because he'd have failed the medical examination and would have been rejected. Now, I find it awfully difficult to imagine how Lincoln, in the world today, could have made his mark at all. But it had been so much against him that I don't think that he'd have reached anything like the eminent position he did, and I think that he might very easily have ended the failure which in early life many people of his day would have thought he was going to be.
I'd like to intrude at this point. Senator, you now have the floor, but may I beg you to yield 1 minute for Olin Matheson.
Olin Matheson Research is constantly helping create new and better metal products, contributing to the dynamic progress that has brought us a long way.
I didn't know he was a novelist.
Take a look, for example.
It's easier than getting up.
In a tremendous breakthrough in processing, you're about to see something that seems incredible. After a pattern has been drawn on a sheet of Olin aluminum, a second sheet is added, and the two are rolled into a single sheet. And then, instantly, the pre-selected tubing pattern is formed by air pressure. This makes possible such things as leak-proof evaporators.
This was done before his address to Congress.
And for your recreation,
he takes his address for you, Kenny.
You also find sturdy, lightweight
Congress,
as well as beautiful aluminum mobile homes for modern traveling comfort, made with Olin aluminum.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
These are only a few of the rapidly growing number of wonderful products made of aluminum and other metals. Produced by Olin Matheson, pioneers in metals research. Now back to Small World and Edward R. Murrow.
Senator Dixon, as you were saying,
Mr. Parkinson, I've been curious of how a professor way out in Malaya could ever contrive Parkinson's law. Would the Parkinson's law have been applicable back in the days of Lincoln, when we had a population, I suppose, about 32 million, and there were probably 40,000 bureaucrats on the payroll? Now, if Carl Sandburg hears that, he'll probably correct me on history, both as to population and the number of payrolls we had back in 1861.
Oh, but surely you must have realized, Ed, that the law is one of universal application. It would have worked equally in Egypt under the Ptolemies, or in China under the old dynasties of Tung Sim and Tang, what it is to get them mixed up, you know. And I think it would have worked anywhere in the world at any time. And the United States is certainly working terribly well now. And I should think it was pretty fairly underway in Lincoln's day.
Professor Parkinson, would you give the class of Sandberg, Dirksen, and Morrow a brief primer on Parkinson's law?
Well, I've never had a class of such distinguished pupils, and I'm naturally rather nervous in undertaking the task, but I'll do my best. Parkinson's law is the law that work expands to fill the time available for its completion. If you're a busy man and you have a task to do, like writing a letter, you dash it off in 2-3 minutes. If you're, shall we say, a middle-aged lady of leisure, you can spend the whole morning writing that letter. Well, if you once get the idea that work is elastic in this world, you realize that in administrative organizations, the mere fact that everybody's busy there doesn't mean that they have any significant work to do.
Right.
That is the secret of Parkinson's law, that the number of people and the amount of work done are quite unconnected with each other. I've tried to illustrate Parkinson's law with a diagram which I put up behind my desk. Your civil servant or your top administrator, when he feels overworked, he thinks that it's because the actual amount of work coming in is more. But in effect, there may be any increase at all, but he's nearly getting older and more tired, and he then demands assistance. But he doesn't want to share the work with someone in his own level. He wants to introduce two assistants, at least two assistants, below him. So he's up there, then there's two fellows down there. And then after a time, each of them begins to
spend time on this.
And each of them does exactly the same thing. He demands two assistants at least.
What?
And so you get the phenomenon of what I call
that's
the rising pyramid of administration.
It doesn't take it down.
Which rises like that. More and more people being brought into the organization.
Well, in other words, we're all going to be submerged by the bureaucrats. Is that right?
That's the gist of it. Forgive me as not particularly a bureaucrat, but one who, through the franchise, is on the public payroll, and this is a little facetious, of course. I've been in Washington, either in the House or in the Senate, for 25 years, so that makes a good orientation point. About the time I came to Washington, I think we had 533,000 on the payroll. Today we have about 2,350,000. Now, I doubt very much whether those figures will add up to population growth in terms of the Parkinson's law, unless there is something in your law, something obscure, that I do not see. That's very difficult to do in words. I was trying to illustrate that the law of showing the serried ranks of civil servants as they're multiplied, I couldn't get the millions on that Senator Dirksen was talking about, and then I added Abraham Lincoln, as if he was a last recruit to the phalanx. And I was trying to show that in this modern world of bureaucracy, an individualist, an eccentric like Lincoln, simply wouldn't fit in at all. One thing that occurred to me in rereading the story of his youth is that today he'd never be able to educate himself in that supremely efficient way in which he did find an education. Instead of that, today he pushed into a high school. Some youth counselor would direct him into a school of business or public administration at his college, university, and he'd end up probably with an adverse report for not reading exactly the books he ought to read.
You're on the panel, Professor.
And then he'd probably have gone after that either into a department of government or in a big business firm And I don't see the deep difference between them that possibly Senator Dixon does.
Dr. Can I intrude?
But anyway, in some bigger organization.
May I intrude?
After a year or so. I'm sure Mr. Sandler will agree with me. Your declaration is good. Well, your declaration is good. Dr. Parkinson believes that Lincoln could not have educated himself in this accelerated age as he did at the time he lived. I think I must disagree with him. First, there was a profound and mystic quality about Abraham Lincoln. On that point, I think anybody will agree. There was a determination, of course, to be educated. And a man of that cast, a man with that particular outlook on life, would have educated himself under any circumstance. He might have been working in some busy mart of commerce here in the country, but I'm confident he would have found time within the framework of every day to draw off, to see the world and his fellow men in perspective, and have been equally profound as he was in his own day and generation.
Senator Dixon, I like your use of those adjectives, profound and mystic, about Lincoln.
Thank you, Carl.
Those hit him off more truly, more genuinely than either the terms liberal or conservative or radical. He moved a course that was profound and mystical throughout his administration. And in 1864, all of the high school books should accentuate the fact that it was not the Republican Party in 1864 that he headed, it was the National Union Party. He was accommodating his policies and his personality to the Democrats who were fighting for the Union. Most preeminent among them was Ulysses S. Grant, who in 1860 cast his ballot for Stephen A. Douglas, a Democrat, for president. He was not a partisan. He was profound and mystic. I'm glad you used those two adjectives. And pardon the interruption.
Dr. Parkinson expressed some doubt in this rather intense, accelerated, highly organized age whether Lincoln could have educated himself as he did at the time he lived. Well, the very fact that he pursued the knowledge that was indicted in all these books, the very fact that he got a book of logic and a book of Euclid while he was still here in the Congress, is probably the best evidence that that is a mental and spiritual quality that will manifest itself under any circumstance, no matter how intensive the age might be.
I think the point I was trying to make was that it's much more difficult to educate yourself without people trying to educate you. Well, Lincoln, left to himself, would pick up books of logic, and someone who's left free to find what he wants to read and to pick up books as Lincoln did in his young days and take them home and master them is in a far better position than the man today, or the boy today, who falls into the clutches of people called educationalists who proceed to stuff him with what they think he ought to read and tell him what they think he ought to know. And that would be the handicap that the young Lincoln, or any equivalent of Lincoln today, would have to face to overcome the educationalists in order to gain a real education.
But doctor, doesn't that actually go back to the capacity of the individual to draw off, no matter how mad the civilization may mean at times, and in so doing, let a fecund mind and a profound spirit do the rest. It's a case of getting away from these intrusions, these disturbances with which we have to contend from time to time.
Well, it is a problem of getting away from them, I quite agree. But it was very much easier for Lincoln because he hadn't to get away from them. He had to work, but in matters of the intellect, he was largely left to himself. And that, surely, is the sort of environment in which his powerful and eccentric and individualistic mind could flourish as it did.
I could never think of Lincoln as being eccentric.
Now, Professor, you're approaching an essential point. The element of solitude, the element of loneliness, The movies, radio, TV, they fight the element of loneliness among people.
But nowadays, someone addicted to loneliness would be taken apart by the psychologist. He'd be told that he wasn't like the other students, that he wasn't mixing in with the group. And he'd end up being led away and psychoanalyzed and given an adverse report and generally penalized for just the qualities which you're describing as Lincoln's greatest assets.
Now, solitude is one thing, but one need not be lonely in solitude. Think of Lincoln's capacity for summoning up from his mind and from his heart all the adventures, all the experiences, the feelings, everything that were a part of the man. And so I never could imagine Lincoln walking in the fields anywhere in the heart of Illinois, in daylight or in darkness, or on a moonlight night at Old Salem or in Springfield, and ever being lonely. You can start back with Leonardo, Shakespeare, and go on with those great Americans, Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln, and all of them never saw a movie or heard a radio or saw a TV. And yet, they knew what you might term in education the element of creative solitude. They were not afraid of loneliness. They used their loneliness toward creative ends. And my lords, I have spoken.
Carl, you are indeed a poet. I am merely a miserable timekeeper, and the time has now come to say goodnight. Next week's guests in just a moment.
Nadie te pasa, porque tú eres miliciano, porque tú eres miliciano, porque tú eres miliciano, mamita mía, que bien te guarden, que bien te guarden. Madrid que bien resiste, Madrid que bien resiste, Madrid que bien resiste, mamita mía. Los bombardeos de la bomba se ríen, de la bomba se ríen, mamita mía, los madrileños,
gleich die Baracken, wir hochgezogen der Stadt voran. Gleich sind die Tage, gleiche Gesichter, gleichmäßig wachsen die Posten ab. Wir sind brav, wir stecken voller Leben, keiner kann uns, wir sind auf dem Grab. Ab Klasse Z, wir meistern unser Leben, bei uns gilt allein die Tat. Denn nur Deutschland, Österreich, Söhne sehen, die ja still nur Befreiung der Heimat sehen. Wir hinten ab, wir stecken voller Leben, wenn wir auch manchmal in langen Nächten danach uns fragen, was wohl die Zukunft auch bringen mag. Wir denken auch an Frau, Kind und Freunde, zurück nach Spanien an manchen Tag. Wir hinten ab, wir stecken voller Leben, keiner kann uns, wir sind auf dem Grab. Ab Klasse Z, wir meistern unser Leben, bei uns gilt allein die Tat. Denn wo Deutschland, Österreich, Söhne sehen, sie hat still nur Befreiung der Heimat sehen. Wir hinten ab, wir stecken voller Leben, wenn unser Tier einmal der Regen, einmal die Kälte, Dreck und Morat uns das Leben vergelt. Doch wir wissen, einmal wird kommen der Tag, an dem hier der Stadtsoldat fällt. Wir hinten ab, wir stecken voller Leben, keiner kann uns, wir sind auf dem Draht. Ob Land erzählt, wir meistern unser Leben, bei uns gilt allein die Tat. Denn wo Deutschland, Österreich, Söhne sehen, sie hat den nur Befreiung der Heimat sehen. Wir hinten ab, wir stecken voller Leben, bei uns gilt allein die Tat. Napshot Robotcha Drusino, o ulici Spanici in Tresna si becni krivnimo, ljoli po voli krivit. Nje brak ja, nje vjak ja, jak njego, nih nipin nas vidiš nas ni. Na from bataljonom rozjego, standardu hori svivni, standardu hori svivni. Kono kinto, 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 kono kinto regimiento. Tengo que marchar al frente, porque quiero entrar en fuego. Tengo jaleo, jaleo, enseñado mi trayadora, y Franco se va a paseo, y Franco se va a paseo. Con Lister y con Galán, Luis y Gallo, y Modesto, con el comandante Carlos, no hay miliciano con miedo. Tengo jaleo, jaleo, enseñado mi traidora, y Franco se va a paseo, y Franco se va a paseo. Con los cuatro batallones que están Madrid defendiendo, fato da la flor de España, la flor más roja del pueblo. Tengo jaleo, jaleo, enseñado mi traidora, y Franco se va a paseo, y Franco se va a paseo. This is the song of the 5th Regiment in Spain fighting against Franco. This is the song of the Ernst Salmon Battalion in Spain, in the International Brigade.
Spanisch Himmel breitet seine Sterne, über uns sind Schützengräben auf. Und der Morgen grüßt von aus der Ferne, bald geht es zum neuen Kampf hinaus. Die Heimat ist weit, doch wir sind bereit. Wir kämpfen und siegen für Sieg. Freiheit! Links ist, denn werden wir nicht weit gehen. Mit uns den Kameraden ohne Gleichen, und rückwärts gibt es für uns nie. Die Heimat ist weit, doch wir sind bereit, wir kämpfen und ziehen.
Heute nur mal, sei die Marionette, aber Marsch, sing es uns noch. Mit der roten Fahne Plastikette, aus dem Kamm, das Delma-Bataillon. Die Heimat ist mein, doch wir sind bereit, wir kämpfen und siegen für dich. Breitet seine Sterne über unseren Schützengräben auf. Und der Morgen grüßt schon aus der Ferne, dank dessen neuen Kampf hinaus. Die Heimat ist mein, doch wir sind bereit. Wir kämpfen und siegen für dich. Freiheit! Den Faschisten werden wir nicht weichen. Auf die Gugelnhagel dicht, mit uns stehen Kameraden ohne Gleichen, und rückwärts gibt es für uns nicht. Die Heimat ist weit, doch wir sind bereit, wir kämpfen und siegen für dich. Freiheit! Rückt ihr an mein, nein, die Marionette, aber Marsch, singet unser Mond. Roten Fahne brecht die Kette, aus dem Kamm, da stellen wir Bataillon. Die Heimat ist mein, doch wir sind bereit, wir kämpfen und siegen für dich. Freiheit!
Ja, the Germans, I heard it from the Germans. And the third one. I hear it, you know, the oh, they go so fantastic, you know. Now that farther, farther,
yeah, farther,
I'm not going to get into the snowy, no, it's not well behind, you know, I know. Mm-hmm. So, I thought this is how I sang, and I learned it.
Sing the song from the Spartacus. Spartacus,
no, okay.
Oh, so,
I'm worried about that. No, this is the song of the Spartacus Revolution in Germany.
Zum Kampf sind wir geboren. Auch zum Kampf sind wir bereit. Denn Karl Liebkin haben wir geschworen. Die rote Luxemburg reichen wir die Hand. Denn Karl Liebknecht haben wir geschworen, die rote Luxemburg reichen wir die Hand. Da steht ein Mann, so fest wie ein Eiche, er hat gewiss, schon manchen Sturm durchlebt, vielleicht ist er schon morgen eine Leiche. Wie es so viele Freiheitskämpfer sind, vielleicht ist er schon morgen eine Leiche. Wie es so viele Freiheitskämpfer sind, wir fürchten nicht, ja nicht, der Donner der Kanonen, wir fürchten nicht, ja nicht, die brave Polizei, den Karl Liebknecht haben sie erschossen. Die rote Luxemburg starb durch Mörderhand, denn Karl Liebknecht haben sie erschossen. Die rote Luxemburg starb durch Mörderhand.
This is a song of the Paris Commune, La Carmagnole. Madame Fatou, ave promi, Madame Fatou, ave promi, de faire gorge tout Paris, de faire gorge tout Paris, Met son clam anche vrada no canonier, a son la carmagnola, vive la son, vive la son, a son la carmagnola, vive la son du canon. Astra, 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 tu la fascista la lanterna, astra, 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 tu la fascista un le pondrà, un le pondrà, un si non un pompa, un le casserà l'orgueule, si non un pompa, l'orgueule la casserà. Danson la carmagnole, vive le son, vive le son, danson la carmagnole, vive le son du canon. Vive la commune de Paris, vive la commune de Paris. C'est mitrailleuse, c'est fusil, c'est mitrailleuse, c'est fusil. Le convenu battu ne se fait pas vaincu. Elle aura sa révanche, vive le son, vive le son. Elle aura sa révanche, vive le son du canon. Astra, 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 tu la fasciste la lanterne. Astra, 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 tu la fasciste, on le pendra. On le pendra, si ne l'en prend pas, on le cassera leur gueule. Si ne l'en prend pas, leur gueule la cassera. Dansons la carmagnole, vive le son, vive le son. Dansons la carmagnole, vive le son du canon. Il le pensa en six semaines, il le pensa en six semaines. D'avoir Moscou entre semaines, d'avoir Moscou entre semaines. Mais l'armée soviétique, lui, a coupé le chic. Grâce à l'armée rose, vive le son, vive le son. Grâce à l'armée rose, vive le son du canon. Astra, 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 tous les nazis à la lanterne. Astra, 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 tous les nazis, on les pendra. On les pendra, si ne l'en prend pas, on les cassera leur gueule. Si ne l'en prend pas, leur gueule on la cassera. Dansons la carmagnole, vive le son, vive le son. Dansons la carmagnole, vive le son du canon. This is a Catalan hymn. Catalunya triomfant, por de l'aix rica i plena, en de l'àvia que ve esta gent, pa no fa mai tan superba. Bon cop de fals, com vulguin mare brega, bon cop de pal. Ara d'ora segadors, ara d'ora d'escalerta, quan convinguin altre punt, es molen ben bé les eines, bon cop de pal. Walk of the falls, Silblattens fallen pendre, Bonk of the falls. A tremoli l'ennemic, Enviant la vostra ensenya, Can concores piques d'or, Can coveis seguem cadenes, We'll strike them down, we'll strike them down. If they again try to enslave us, we'll strike them down. Thank you.
I'm ready.
Mexican. One of the most beautiful songs there is. In any language.
Huh? wake up, you damned ones of the earth. Wake up for the last struggle. The international show fight for the rights of man.
this is a Christian song?
Yes, this is from Canada.
It sounds like heathen. It sounds like a good old heathen song.
Yeah, we went to the same kind of camp in the summer.
Oh, sing some more of those, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's be the part and
find
our calling will
oh, no,
I know one. Sing that one.
That sounds like a good one, you better record it.
For you who died for us, there's now embalming school.
We do our
best to give you at national embalming school.
And when you die,
we'll dig a hole and put you in so you can mold. We live for you who died for us. National embalming school.
Ripped flesh, hacked the body in the cavities, and oh, how the body smells. It must be out of season. We live for you. You die for us. National embalming school. Okay, where will we be? Where will we all be 100 years from now? Where will we all be 100 years from now? Pushing up the daisy, pushing up the daisy. That's where we'll all be 100 years from now.
And the story about Ellen Watt, that really beloved? No.
in here?
Yeah.
I visit Mac. How come you don't hear it out of here?
You will. See, I'll have to move. Don't touch it because your fingers will make nervous.
I visit Mac. I visit Mac. How come you don't hear it out?
You will when you get done.
I visit Mac. Right. Do I have to say Rachel?
No, tell about your visit with Mac.
And I placed my cat, the cat there, and he jumped over me on my head. And then I went in the car and drive home.
Tell how Mac looked.
Mac looked fine, and he had some glasses on. There was one cat there, and you won't know there's two cats there, but there is one.
What did Mac say to you?
He said, hello? What did Lorraine say?
Lorraine
said, hello, too.
Tell what Mac looks like.
He looks like a giant man.
How come you didn't give Mac a bun?
I did. You're sorry. And what did I do next?
You wouldn't look at Mac.
Oh, yes, I would.
Did you?
I looked at Mac. So tall. Now what do I say?
Do you like that?
I like that.
How come you wouldn't come in and see Mac when we first got there? You wouldn't come in the house?
I wouldn't come in the house. I stayed out there and then I went in the house. I didn't come in right away. Then I came in. Wait. Because I didn't want to see. I did want to see. I don't know, Debbie. They look like, they look like...
The painting? You talking about the painting?
Yeah. The paintings look like, the paintings look like cars. They look like different cars.